The Back Nine Boys Golf Show. All about golf, from putting to driving, from hooks to whatever. Now, here's your host of the Back Nine Boys Golf Show, Rich Stiles.
Hey, good morning and welcome to the show. The Back Nine Boys is brought to you by Bridgestone Golf. Play the Tour B ball with Mindsec technology. By the Club at Sea Palms. By PXG, you've never played like this before. By RSM, proud sponsor of the RSM Classic, giving back to our community. By Stitch Golf, dress your game, and by CJ's Italian Restaurant, voted best pizza, known for their deep dish and thin crusts, plus much, much more. Check out their full menu at CJsItalianRestaurant.com. On the show this morning, we're talking with Chris Easy, who has played in the and qualified for the U.S. Senior Open. And Chris, welcome to the Back Nine Boys podcast. Appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Rich. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about your career so far in golf. You've won the Greenville County Championship three times, and the first one was in 2004. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. So the Greenville County in the upstate of South Carolina is a very large county. So historically, it's had a, you know, a fairly good contingent of amateur players through the years. I mean, I think some recognizable names, probably like Bill Haas and the Lucas Glovers of the world, have played in it through the years and probably won it. And so, you know, I was born and raised in Greenville, so I've always played in the Greenville County probably since I was a teenager, you know, growing up playing high school and college golf. And it's always just been one of those fun competitive events around our area that most everyone plays in. So it's fun, it's competitive, and there's a lot of good amateurs in the upstate of South Carolina that play in it. So in 2004, I was at Furman, which sets up well for my game. It's a traditional longer golf course. And so historically, until I got older, I could, you know, I was probably a little longer than most. So it fit my game well and just happened to play well that week and win it. So it was a good week.
And then it took you 13 years, 14 years to win it again?
It did. You know, I had several probably close finishes to try to win it again. Again, to my earlier point, a lot of these courses around the upstate and that the County Golf Association can get typically are a little shorter, and that, you know, brings a lot of good players in that wedge games are probably better than mine. And so, right. But it did. It took a while. And again, another, you know, the three times I've won it, Furman, Green Valley, and my home course, which is Holly Tree, all what I'll call traditional little longer golf courses, put a little more emphasis on long game, which suits my game. So, Green Valley, I think that was the 50th anniversary, Mike Gravely, who has sadly passed now, who played the tour in the 80s, won it, I believe, four times, and that was the 50th anniversary, I believe, when I won it at Green Valley in, like, 2017, maybe. And that was a good week. Right, Green Valley, traditional longer golf course where Jay Haas lived early before he moved to Thornblade. So it was a good test and fit my game well.
And then you won it again in 2020. I mean, three-time winner. There's not many three-time winners, are there?
There's only I don't have the exact stats, but I think it's just a handful. I won it here at Holly Tree, which is my home course. And so I had a little home field advantage and, I played very well, probably one of the best tournaments in my life that week. I think I shot 15 under for three rounds. So just set up really, really well for me. Just like a lot of us, I struggle with short game and putting. And so occasionally when I can get a week where I can feel comfortable on greens, then usually I'm going to do pretty well because ball striking and the drivers usually the strongest points of my game. It's usually, I lose a lot of shots to the field around and, you know, 50 yards in around the green, getting up and down bunker play. And I'm sure we'll get to it later. That's what really hindered me at the Open was just these guys that do it for a living, and even the kids these days, the amateurs, they're so good with their wedges and putters, and that's what makes them so good.
So talk about the journey to qualifying for the U.S. Senior Open and then finally being qualified and then playing it. Let's first talk about qualifying. How did that start?
Sure, yeah. So I turned 50 in June of this year. So earlier this year, as we all do, as you know, amateur players that still play a lot of these tournaments, you start looking at the calendar and talking with my, group of golfers that I play with, and half of us are over 50, and they were like, hey, you can qualify for the Senior Open. I didn't really realize it, because in our minds we're always thinking senior amateur golf is 55. So early in the year, I signed up, and one of the courses in South Carolina in Florence is Florence Country Club. It's an old Donald Ross course that a lot of us in the state and the Southeast have played junior golf or state amateur type events through the years, and I like it very well. It suits my game. Qualifying that day is if I can remember, the Southeast went through a sort of a drought, if you recall, sort of in that March, April, May time frame.
Yeah.
So course was very baked out. I had never seen the fairways that sort of brown. So it just played a lot different, and I'll say I'm not protect the field, but you just didn't see very deep low scores like I figured you would at a Florence, because it's shorter. And so I was able just to navigate around that day, not do anything special, shoot a couple under. And because I think, like 11 or 12 spots, got through that first qualifier. So I have twin boys, one plays college golf, the other's a golfer too, but he's in South Carolina. He caddied for me that day, and it was just a good day. It was just keep the ball in front of you and try not to make many mistakes and try to qualify. And so it went well. The second qualifier, which I knew would be a lot tougher, was at Treyburn Country Club up in Raleigh.
Up in Durham. Yeah.
And it's as you probably know, it's a McConnell course.
Yeah.
It's a Fazio course. So it's a traditional, it's a longer championship style course. I had not played it. I'm a member of Musgrove, which is a McConnell course, but I had never played Treyburn. So we got up there the day before, and again, it suited my game. Longer, tougher setup, puts a little more premium on your mid irons, instead of just wedge and putt. And it was baked out as well. So the fairways were very firm, brown. You had to control your golf ball off the tee, and then they also had some bent greens, which you don't see that much in the Southeast, which I actually like. I grew up on bent greens, so that was a tough day. I had hit probably in the first 15 holes probably 13 out of the 15 greens and hadn't got anything to go, and I just got two putts to go in the last four holes, and my son and I went in the clubhouse and sit there and waited for several hours because I was one of the off, and we actually sat with Bradley Hughes, if a lot of people are familiar with, teaching professional at Holly Tree, and so him and I both just hung out in the clubhouse for several hours, and he shot one under, I shot two under, he had to go into a playoff, and unfortunately didn't make it, but it was extremely, extremely hot that day. Heat index was well over 100, and it was just, again, these qualifiers. In my opinion, at our age, we just amateur golfers. You go out and try to, most of these courses we play, you try to make as many birds as you can. But then when you get in these qualifiers, and I think the challenge is not to let your strategy, your mind shift, change from what got you there. And so don't play defensive. Don't play negative. Don't, every hole or every tee box or every shot, just naturally say, where do you not hit it? That's never worked well for me. And that day, we just, we had nothing to lose. Just stay aggressive, try to make birdies. And it worked out. And, it didn't really realize that we got to 18. And my son said, do you want to know where you're at? And I said, yeah, I'd like to know where I'm at. Because 18 at Treyburn's a very difficult hole. And he said, you're inside it now, but we're early. And it's playing tough. The wind's going to pick up in the afternoon. So we need a par. And I was you know, fortunate enough to hit a good drive and hit a wedge of 9 iron to 20 feet and two putt. And it was good enough, I guess.
It held up.
It held up.
Yep. All right. So then you go to the U.S. Senior Open after that. And tell us about your experience playing in that and with the people that you were playing with.
Yeah, so that was really that was, you know, to sum it up in just one word, was not overwhelming. It was awesome. The whole event, the whole tournament leading up to it, I was able to get up a couple weeks early and see it. I had a couple buddies in our sort of golfing group here in the upstate said, you need to go see it, you know, playing bent fairways and Kentucky bluegrass rough. It's just so different. The Bermuda courses we play, you got to go see it. Try to get comfortable. You know, I'm not one that really, like a lot of us in our older age playing little amateur events, I don't really get nervous anymore, but I found myself leading up to that type of event, really starting to, we'll call it getting nerves, or just anxiousness to get there and play. But it was an awesome experience. The USGA, I'd played a four ball before, and I knew that the USGA puts on just such a well-run tournament. Not to mention this is a pro event and a major that I haven't experienced more. So I knew there's going to be a lot of things that I'm just not used to, that these professionals traveling week in and week out, logistically, you know, prepping for courses, getting there, all the normal things that they're just used to, and it's another week I had never went through. So, you know, I got there, flew in Sunday evening, and you know, we just went to work on Monday. It was extremely hot, if you recall. I mean, every day was heat indexes well over 100. So it was managing the heat, trying to learn the golf course. Obviously, it was as any U.S. Open style setup, it's just a premium on fairways. I looked at my stats for the week. I didn't miss that many fairways, maybe in the first clough, but the ones that I did, I think I bogeyed everyone. It was that penalizing for me, at least.
Right.
It was all in all, the course, the history of Scioto was amazing, you know, meeting the staff the 2 weeks before, and then still the staff, all the staff at the USGA, the player hospitality, the player locker room, which I had never experienced with professionals that we've watched all our lives, was it was unbelievable. You know, those guys are just like we are in our pro shops, and where they're hanging out with their families or in the locker room, you know, they play golf a little better than most of us. But other than that, they're normal guys, and they hang out and they chat and talk about the same stuff that you and I or any of our buddies that we hang out with in our golf groups do, which made me feel a lot more comfortable just being around and hanging out with those guys when you're not on the golf course. But as far as the first two rounds, you know, I settled in okay. I was a little nervy the first couple holes, but you know, the first round, I was going about my business, even one over through most of the day and plodding along. I was struggling with the speed of the greens. I would leave some short, and you know, you leave yourself in that 6 to 8 foot range with as much slope and undulation as those type greens makes it for a long day.
Sure.
But as far as, I guess, handling the situation and hitting the ball, you know, I struck the ball, I would say 95% as well as I normally do, which, you know, was nice. Again, when you get on that type of setup, and as I mentioned before, you know, the putter is really my weakest part of my game. It really showed its head, you know, there for me. And so when you lose a little confidence and, it just makes it tough, but everything was, I don't think, you know, with all the conversation I had between, you know, my family that came up, and we had a good 8 or 10 folks that are good close friends of mine that came up and watched, everything that everybody said was just overwhelming. What an unbelievable golf course setup, tradition, history, and experience. It was just unbelievable.
I've got about 30 seconds. So who did you see or talk with that you've watched over the years?
Well, so quite a few. talking with Boo Weekly, he was a character. I mean, he's just the coolest guy that, you know, you watch on TV and you see some of the things he says.
He's just so genuine.
That was cool. He's just so genuine. He made an off the cuff comment. In Poulter walked in, and you know, Ian always wears, he wears tube socks. He wears socks up to his knees, and you know, Boo made some funny joke about he didn't have to worry about walking in the 5-inch Kentucky bluegrass rough and getting hit by bugs, you know, right there in front of everybody. So that's just Boo, and I'm sure these guys cut up like that all the time, but hearing it firsthand was awesome. Got to hang out and talk a little with, you know, my wife is second cousins with Davis Love, and so got to meet him and got to hang out and get a little perspective from him and just inside conversation with someone like that that's done everything he's done in the game is the, you know, just once in a lifetime type things.
Awesome. Chris, thanks for talking with us. Thanks for talking about your experience and congrats on making, you know, the qualifying for the U.S. Senior Open. And who knows, you may be back there again.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Rich. And if I do try it again, I'm going to make an emphasis to work on the wedge and the putter before we try that again.
All right,
thank
Chris.
You. Thank
Appreciate
you so
you.
Much, Rich. Thank
All
you.
Right, thank you.
This is Mark Capovecchia, former PGA Tour player and Champions Tour player, still playing a little bit on the Champions Tour. Thanks for listening to us on the Back Nine Boys.
Welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles, and we're with Alex Urban, the executive director of the Tour Championship, which we are about a month away from at Eastlake. Alex, as always, this time of the year, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's amazing. It always seems to sneak up on us. It's a little bit quicker every single year, but that's a good thing. Best time of the year.
It does. Defending champ Tommy Fleetwood. Right now, he's as of this week, he's 10th in the standings, but what a tour championship last year with him winning. What a popular winner he was.
It was really special. You know, I've obviously been to and been involved in a lot of PGA Tour events and golf tournaments in my life. And it's rare that you get a emotional, you know, a rooting interest from the crowd that is so clearly defined. Everyone wanted Tommy to win that tournament. And I think it says a lot about him. It was fascinating. You have, you know, Tommy Fleetwood and an American and in a Ryder Cup year, and everyone's rooting for the British guy.
Yeah.
I think that says a lot about the kind of person that Tommy is.
Yeah.
I think he came so close to so many PGA Tour wins and handled every single one with complete grace. He did that just this last week at the Open too at his home tournament. I know he wanted to play better and win. And it was just that kind of attitude really rubs people the right way. And I think everyone had that same thought. I was like, man, what a cool first tournament this would be for him to win the big one at the end of the year. And he pulled it off. And it was just what a cool scene on 18, just a nice smile. I mean, it was just pure joy coming off of him. It was really special.
Yeah, and he's a special guy. I mean, everybody that I've talked to that says that they've met people that have met him said he's just a great guy. He is what he looks like on the course, just the right genuine, there, right in front of you.
The genuine article, Rich. It's like you know, in this day and age, I think people really love when that's the case. Not always the case. And with him, exactly what you see is what you get. He's what a delightful guy.
Yeah. All right. So we've got it coming up about a month away at Eastlake for this year and next year. Mm-hmm. Kind of unknown where it's going to go after 27. All those details will come to you and I guess all of us a little bit later on. But top 30 players are going to come to Eastlake and they're going to vie for the tour championship and the prize money, $10 million to the winner. And like last year, which was the change, everybody starts even.
Yeah, the format change we made last year, you know, we had used, I mean, this event's been through a lot of formats over the years, really.
It has.
Since the FedEx Cup began in 2007. And, you know, there's no perfect way to do any of it. You're trying to figure out the most consequential way to end the season and something that's exciting, but also celebrates a year-long champion. And it's not that it was right or wrong. It's just it has gone through these different iterations. And I think this last year, it was really fun for every single player, all 30, to show up here on site and have the same chance of lifting the trophy at the end of the week. And I think it really provided a different vibe for all the competitors. I think it felt like the guys were showing up and practicing a little bit harder early in the week. You know, especially the guys that may have been 10 shots back in the old format. You know, they're starting on an even playing field. And Thursday, I think in particular, carried a whole different kind of energy than it had in the previous years, where, you know, every single person could have played well and won, and it created a really high stakes, exciting golf tournament, which translated into a lot of things. I think we were the highest TV ratings of any non-major of any tournament last year on the PGA Tour, which I'm not surprised by. The Tommy Fleetwood story plus this exciting consequential end of the season. It was exciting.
Isn't it amazing how some of the players like Tommy, like Scotty, can move the needle on the TV ratings? I mean, it's just incredible to me.
Yeah, no, I think there's just so many great stories. It's about stories, right? People want to watch guys they either relate to or they can't relate to because they're so good. And they, like, Scotty comes to mind, like the way he plays golf. Like he legitimately never plays badly, it seems like. And even when he's playing badly, and I use that in quotation marks, he's not really playing that badly. He's, you know, a bad week for him is not finishing in the top five. That's a to get to that level at this sport is amazing. And then you have all these great storylines, I think, of obviously we're just coming off of the Open Championship, and you have the other side of the coin of like a Ryan Fox, who seems relatable and his swing's a little unorthodox, and he's played in a lot of major championships without success, and here he's won the Open, and that changes the trajectory of his season. It changes the trajectory of what the rest of his career might look like. And it's just really fun. Look at JJ Spahn, same deal last year. And it's you get these really great human interest stories. That's what sports is all about. That's why golf, you always it's such a finicky game. Anyone that tees it up has a chance to win, and that's what makes our sport so exciting.
One thing about golf, it's like you play one day. I mean, not the pros. I'm talking about guys like you and me. We play one day and we think, "Oh, I think I figured something out." And then the next day you go out, or 2 or 3 days later, and it's like, "What? I didn't figure anything out." It's back. I mean, it's such a fickle game. It really is, except for these guys that come to East Lake.
The margins of differentiation between the players at the level that show up here at East Lake, or even the play week to week on the PGA Tour, it's so slim. They are all incredibly good at the game of golf. They're all superhumans. Like it's truly what they the way golf courses are set up. And I know there's always a lot of, you know, debate on golf course setups and things. The average person is not showing up to a PGA Tour setup and playing better than normally. And they're set up more difficult, I promise you. Like ask anyone that plays in our we do a sponsor Monday AM after the tournament, and our sponsors go out there and they get their butts kicked by the rough length and the green speeds and all that stuff. Our guys make it look so easy. And because they're so good, and the differentiation is really it's such a slim margin. It's a missed putt here or there, a chip that could have been slightly closer, and you do that 2 to 4 shots per round and you're 8 shots back, you're 10 shots back. It's an amazing level that these guys play the sport at.
So when the sponsors play on Monday, do they play from sponsor tees?
Yes, thankfully they'd be out. I'm not sure they'd ever
Okay,
finish if
right.
we put them
Okay,
on the
okay.
professional tees back there. Yeah,
Yeah.
and they're playing it from much shorter than what the professional. You know, every year someone talks about like what would the average 15 handicapper shoot from the tips at a PGA Tour, but 110, 120.
Maybe
That's the
more.
number. Maybe
Maybe
even more.
more.
And if you're putting them all out and not doing any gimmies, definitely more. So like it's. Yeah, no. Thankfully, we tee them off a little bit shorter.
Well, you've got an unbelievable group of guys coming in about a month, as we said, top 30. Scotty's still number one as far as FedEx points, which probably won't change that much between now and the Tour Championship. Probably the top five or top 10 probably won't change much, even if
Depends.
somebody
Scott gets hot in
wins.
the playoffs, maybe wins a couple of times, and at the FedEx Aintree Championship in BMW, that can happen. But you know they've changed the points a little bit. You can't really come way from behind and move up the standings, which I think is a good thing. You want to You want that those standings to really reflect the season when people show up here at East
Right.
Lake.
Right. So when the 30 show up, it's probably, they're coming in Sunday, probably. Most of them probably coming in over the weekend. Some come in on Monday. What do y'all do for them, like at other tournaments? I mean, any events or dinners or any kind of
Yeah.
entertainment?
Well, in terms of arrival, nearly all of them, in fact, all of them come in on Sunday night because they're all coming from BMW Championship, which doesn't have a cut, and they're all
Gotcha.
playing week to week. So they're coming in from, I think, I believe that event's in St. Louis this year. So they'll come in, they'll finish in St. Louis, hop a plane to Atlanta. Thankfully, it's we're a Delta hub. I'm assuming some of them are flying private. They're coming nice and direct here to Atlanta. They'll get started on Monday morning with practice. Obviously, usually this time of year it's pretty warm, so they have to schedule out their practice. A lot of them show up pretty early to get their work in, trying to stay out of the 1 to 4 window if they can.
Right.
And then there's various things throughout the week. We do some things with our three proud partners, Coca-Cola, Southern Company, and Accenture. The Payne Stewart Award is something that's been supported and sponsored for a long time by Southern Company. That's on Tuesday evening. We actually just announced the recipient of that this year is Nota Begay the third.
What a great
He's
choice.
a really, really great guy. I think I'm really excited to see his speech. And it's such a great award because it celebrates the things that happen. What happens inside the ropes is great, and these guys are awesome at golf. But the guys that can extend their influence to doing good and affecting people positively in their day-to-day lives, or starting foundations, or all the various things that they do and choose to do with their influence is really cool. It's been really special for me to
Yeah.
be present for that the last few years since I've been here. So that's it. That's always a huge night, and a number of our players will attend that. We have an event on Wednesday night through Coca-Cola called Taste of the Tour. That's a really special one that celebrates the first tee of Metro Atlanta. We usually have a couple players that sneak over to that, and are I think Shane Lowry's been there in the past. Some other guys. Our Hope tee shot on Thursday is really special. That kicks off the week. And that's two kids from the first tee of Metro Atlanta that hit that kind of opening ceremonial tee shot. These kids can
Right.
play too. They hit absolute bullets off that tee.
I know.
And it's just fun. And Accenture gives a scholarship to each of them, which has continued to kind of steadily get more. It's a really special week. There's kind of something going on all the time. I think those are the kind of weeks that are special on the PGA Tour.
Well, and it's also special for all the things that the Tour Championship provides to the charities. I mean, the building up around East Lake, the first tee program. I mean, there's just the giving of the PGA Tour with the Tour Championship and what it does for the area around Atlanta and East Lake is just incredible.
Yeah, it's the PGA Tour, in general as a whole, one of our clear charters is to make these communities where we play better,
Right.
to leave them better than when we got here. And it's a really special thing to see how every tournament interacts with its community. And I would say that here in Atlanta, the relationship that the Tour Championship has with the East Lake Foundation, the first tee of Metro Atlanta, some of the other nonprofits that are kind of a part of that East Lake world, purpose-built
Right.
communities, focused community strategies. It's hard to think of a relationship that has created more direct impact. Like this neighborhood is a better place because of East Lake Golf Club, because of the Tour Championship and that relationship that they've
Sure.
had.
Sure.
And I mean, since 98, I believe in terms of the total nonprofit giving, it's more than $71 million. We did 7.3 million last year. It's a record
Wow.
year for us. We're expecting more of the same this year. It's what gets us excited here. For those of us that live and work here, it's really it's unique to be part of an event that gets to provide that kind of support back to the community. It's something that's really, I think it's something that really drives the staff and the
Yeah,
tour.
let's jump back to the Southern Company and the speech that Nota is going to give. Any indication, and this is just a wild card, do you think Tiger will introduce him?
A really good question. I don't know. That's one I usually just attend. I'm not on the planning
Right.
committee for it. I certainly know that they're close. I obviously can't speak for Tiger. I also know that they're really good friends. I'm sure whatever involvement, whether it is going to happen or not, is what will drive it is making sure that it's Nota Begay the third's moment, that
Yes.
it's his stage. And so I don't know if that I you know who, for other people to decide. And so I'm sure that will factor into whoever's decision, that sort of thing. But
Yeah,
I do know
that
they're
would just.
close. Obviously, they've been close for a long time since going back to their days at Stanford together.
Yeah, I think they roomed together at Stanford or
Yeah, I think they
something
were
like that. Yeah.
they're buds. So
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm quite positive that Tiger is excited for Nota.
Oh, of course.
I think everyone is. It's just
Yeah.
there's one of those guys in our sport that I've never heard one person even breathe a negative word about. He's just a great
Yeah.
guy.
Yeah. Well, you've got a lot going on, and in a month, it'll be over for another year, and then you'll start planning for 2027.
Yes, sir.
But thank you for being with us. I thank you for your time, and we will talk soon. Thank you.
Sounds great. Thank you. And if anyone wants tickets, tourchampionship.com. That's where you can find yourself here at East Lake Golf Club here at the end of August.
You got it. Alex, always a pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
My name is Luke Leesburg. I'm an assistant professional here at Moonlight Basin in Big Sky, Montana. And you're listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
Welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles, and we are with PGA Tour caddy, formerly here at Sea Island, but now with Stephen Fisk on the PGA Tour. And Jay, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being with us again.
Always a pleasure to talk with you, Rich.
All right, we did an interview in October when Stephen won the Sanderson Farms tournament. Tell us a little bit about the second win here at ISCO. You had a little playoff. Tell us a little bit about the final round, especially the back nine coming into the tournament. You played well all weekend, obviously.
Yeah, we got off to a strong start on Thursday. We shot 7 under. He was playing really well. He's been struggling this year with his iron play. Driver's been really good. He's been putting the ball nicely. Was just kind of missing that one piece of the approach play, and kind of figured something out on Tuesday. Wednesday during the pro-am was really good. And then Thursday came out co-lead after the first round, 7 under. Played well again on Friday, shot 4 under, and then shot 2 under on Saturday. We were two back of Lucas Glover going into the final round, and didn't get off to the greatest of start, but he made about a 14 footer for par on the first hole,
Whoa.
and he looked at me when we were walking off the first hole, and he said, "Just like Sanderson," because
Oh
he made
boy.
probably like an 18, 20 footer for par on the first hole at Sanderson.
Yeah.
So right then and there, I kind of knew he was in the right frame of mind. And he's one of those players that I've worked for that when he gets in that moment, there's a different gear in the focus level. Is top notch, and he's craving that being
All
in
right.
contention.
So what happened on Tuesday? You said you figured something out. What did you figure out on Tuesday?
So his just looking at some numbers on TrackMan and some swing videos, and he was getting kind of some side bend along with in his approach play, we would get one that would start left, go left. We would get one that would be timed up perfectly, and then we would get one that would be a weak face and it would be short right. So it's
Right.
just a mixture of very inconsistent approach play that is impossible to caddy for, let alone for him to play. So just kind of saw some numbers on the TrackMan that we needed to get those in check with his face and with his path. So just
Okay.
kind of getting not swinging so far left, along with that side bend, kind of staying tall, which he likes to do.
So how was it on the playing with Lucas Glover on Sunday, especially going into the back nine, knowing Lucas is a major tour winner, been on the tour for a long time. He's looked up to by a lot of folks. How was it?
We were actually
the group behind.
Right. We were the group, well, group in front of Lucas. Now, who did he play with? Anyway, Aaron Wise he played with.
Okay, gotcha.
So, you know, we saw this, I think I saw it after number 7. We were tied for the lead. And then I think he birdied 8 and 10. And we birdied 10 and 11. I saw the leaderboard. I think we were tied or maybe one back after 12 or 13. So we kind of knew that it was really Lucas. At that time, it was Lucas and Steven kind of going back and forth. And then a couple holes later, we saw that Taylor had posted at 16 under. So we knew we needed to at least get to 16 under. But yeah, I mean, it was, and Lucas kind of faded there at the back.
Right.
But I can't say enough good things about Lucas. He is the pro's pro, one of the nicest humans.
Oh, yeah.
He's the best.
Yeah. All right. So here you are. You need to get to 16. So you've got a few holes left. Tell us a little bit about what you guys were thinking, what you and Steven were talking about as you were going down after each shot.
Yeah, so 15 was kind of straight downwind. It's really the last good opportunity, and we knew we needed to get – we were at 15 with 4 to play, and we knew we needed to get one more or, you know, 2 to win it and outright.
Right. And
it was straight downwind. We hit 5 iron off the tee. We're trying to hit something 250 yards with being firm and downwind. And we did that. And we had about 128 into a back middle pin on 15. And we hit sand wedge and he hit it to 3 feet, made that putt to get to 16. And then on number 16, we hit our drive left. We're in pretty deep rough. Didn't quite get it to the green. We were in the bunker short left, had a probably 20-yard bunker shot, and he hit it to a foot and a half, kicked that. 17, we had it's a par three, hit a 6-iron right over the stick to 20 feet. Looked like this putt was going in the dead middle and just crept out on the right side. And then had a 30 footer on 18 to win it in regulation and just missed it. But, you know, to get in the playoff, it's kind of almost a sigh of relief.
Yeah. You're like,
all right. Now it's just match play.
Right.
You know, 1v1, either, you know, someone's going to win, someone's not. So just to get in that playoff was huge.
All right. So you go into the playoff. You tie 2 holes. Now you're in the 3rd hole for a playoff. Tell us what was going on.
So when we went to scoring after regulation, they gave us a pin sheet and they said, for the first 2 playoff holes, it'll be the same pin location. After the 2nd playoff hole, we're going to change pins. And if we, after 5 playoff holes, because they're playing 18 over and over and over and over and over again.
Okay.
So if we get 5, we'll change it again. So the first 2 playoff holes, you know, we both had really good first playoff hole. We had really good drives. We hit it short right in the bunker, got up and down. Taylor had a 8-footer for birdie to win it. He missed it. The 2nd playoff hole, Steven got up and down out of a bunker from probably 25 yards, hit it to 2.5 feet. His bunker play on the back 9 and in the playoff was 2nd to none. I mean, it was just stellar.
Yeah.
And Taylor got up and down and then the final playoff hole. So they moved the pin location to like a front middle pin. And we hit one right down the middle of the fairway. Taylor was in the bunker, which, mind you, this 18th hole is so hard. It's a par 5 for the members, but they make it a par 4 for the tournament. So I was like, this playoff's never going to end. This is such a hard. And, you know, we got lucky that Taylor didn't get it up and down on the third playoff hole, and Steven just had the 2-putt for par to win.
Which is incredible. Because now that changes your whole schedule, not necessarily for this year, but looking at next year. What does that win mean for you and Steven? Masters 2027?
Unfortunately, not, since it was an opposite field event.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, okay.
We did move up to 79th in the world and top 50 at the end of the year. We'll get you into the majors.
Okay. And,
so, I mean, it got us players. It got us PGA. It actually got 2 years on the DP World Tour. If he has any interest going over and playing on the DP World Tour at all. The biggest thing is that it gets him another year. Typically, it's 2 years, but since we won last fall, that gave us 2 years, 26 and 27.
Gotcha.
Since we won this year, it tacks on an additional year, and that'll be 2028 when they have the two-tier tour model.
Yeah.
No one really knows exactly what the eligibility of if that'll get us onto track one or track two. I don't know. We haven't heard yet, but he's exempt for, you know, at least 2.5 more years.
All right. So let's go back to this year. So you're 61st on the FedEx list and you've got 3 more tournaments. What's the goal? To get lower on the FedEx list, to get on that top 50?
Yeah, that's still the magic number. To get in that playoff, get in the playoff starting at Memphis, they take the top 70 on the FedEx Cup, and then 50 will go to St. Louis, and then 30 to Eastlake. But yeah, 50 still will be signature events next year. And that's where you want to be. That's where you're playing against best players in the world, best tournaments on tour. That's where we want to be.
What are your thoughts and what are Steven's thoughts when you two get together and you hear Brian Rollup talk about this new championship series and challenger series? I know you want to be in the championship flight, but what are your initial thoughts when you heard about what they were going to do for 2028?
I think it's good. I mean, if you think about it, they're going to have, as a PGA Tour, like tiers, there's 2 tiers. One's going to have 120 to 130. One's going to have 144. So that's 270 players,
right,
that are tour members. So, you know, for the last few years, it feels like it's just been getting smaller and smaller and more cutthroat.
Right.
And I think this 2-tier system is going to give more opportunity, which I think makes for more stories. As far as caddying, you know, there's going to be more opportunities, more jobs for people. Everything I've heard so far, I think, has been really positive.
Okay. Well, it sounds like the position that you're in now, being 61st in the FedEx list and trying to get lower the next 3 tournaments, that, you know, if you continue in that kind of stature, that you'll be in the championship series come 2028. That's looking at 2027 being a good year too.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what we're trying for.
Yeah, because that's a big difference. I think it's $20 million minimum purses in the championship series and $4 million minimum on the challenger series.
Exactly.
But it also seems, I've heard Rory say, well, then the challenger series is like just a a bigger Korn Ferry event.
Right.
What have you heard? Is Korn Ferry still going to be around?
I have not heard.
You're not in those inner circle meetings? Come on, Jay.
No. I just show up and do what I'm told.
With your yardage book and say, okay, come on, bro, let's go.
That's right. Exactly. I really don't know if Korn Ferry's going to be a thing or if that's kind of going to morph into the Challenger series. I really have no idea.
Well, those inner circle meetings, I know you're not involved. I'm definitely not involved. I'm far back from that. But good luck in 3M, Rocket, and Wyndham. Hope you get into the playoffs. Good luck to you and Steve. Congrats.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show with Rich Stiles. Go to back9boys.com for all things golf whenever you want it. We'll be back next week with an all-new Back Nine Boys at back9boys.com.